Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just from understanding both sides of an argument, but also in awakening the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of our time. This evening, we continue our ongoing 10-part Bringing America Back to Life 2012 symposium presentations. Please sit back and enjoy.
On March 9th and 10th, Cleveland Right to Life hosted the third annual Bringing America Back to Life symposium. Through prayer, action, the vote, and education, we labor to uphold the sanctity of human life and lead our nation back to a culture of life. We hope you will be inspired and motivated as you listen to our guest speakers define and defend the complex issues that make up the pro-life movement.
Hello, everyone. How are you? I'm so young, I don't need glasses. Or better yet, I actually have my computer screen here blown up to 285%. This talk has a lot of numbers in it. Oh, not numbers. Oh, no. Just so don't glaze over. I've tried to put them in a way that makes it really understandable, because this topic on demographics, by virtue of what it is number heavy. And I know, sitting out in an audience and hearing numbers, it just sort of comes over like a big wash, and you get glazed, and the food starts digesting from lunch, and we don't know what's happening. So we'll try to keep the numbers as limited as we can, but we really have to talk about numbers, because that's the whole issue. But the numbers aren't their own standalone thing. We need to keep all of these in context. And since we are talking about what is amounting to the killing of, on the one hand, and the reduction of human life on the other, we need to take that and put it into the context of it being diabolical. Sin, evil, has consequences in this life and the next. And whenever believers, faithful believers, are trying to impart the truth, divine truth, a great place to start with people who will not start in that area, because they either don't believe in God or they don't believe in the same religion, whatever it is, don't go straight to, well, because God says so. Because, see, we have this wonderful connection between divine truth and earthly truth, natural truth, that they're related. And whatever happens in one happens in the other. So sin has consequences in this life and the next life. So as we're talking about these things, keep that as the context. Keep that as the context. If you could sum up anything at all about what has happened for the last couple of generations, it would be this: that the current generations, particularly the older one and on down to 30s, have simply refused to provide the earth with the next generation. Just haven't given the earth its next generation. And there's a human cycle that runs through all of this, and missing that propagation of the species. And people say, what do you mean? Every time I listen to this, you know, the world's population, as they say, it's increased again, and it's increased again. Sometimes, because of the numbers we're dealing with, it takes a while for something to work through the system. Bear that in mind, because that's very key. I'll give you an example. Right now, Europe's population stands at roughly 730 million people. That's from Russia to the Atlantic, about 730 million people. By 2050, which is a generation, a biblical generation from now, 40 years, that population will be 550 million. A 25% drop. A 25% drop. That is a hair under the devastation that Europe experienced as a result of the Black Death. There is a demographic Black Death going on in Europe right now. At the end of this century, so this is for those of you who are, you know, college age-ish in your 30s, this is your grandchildren. This is your grandchildren. By the end of this century, the population of Europe will have shrunk at its current rate to just a tick over 200 million. A 75% drop from its current level. And at that point, actually before that point, it will be irreversible. It will be irreversible because the average age, not the median, the average age will be over 60 years old. And we're talking just the end of this century, just in one century. If you need proof of it, look at Russia's population today. Today, Russia's population. It's already decreasing. The Russian population shrinks. There are actually less Russians year on year by 750,000 every year. The Russian population today, not 20 years from now, not 12 years from now, not at the end of the century, right now, today, there are 750,000 less native-born Russians than there were this time last year. And as you put these numbers in and they run through the system, the cycle, those drops in population, they don't sort of come down level like this. They start to do, at some point, the kind of inverted hockey stick where they start to drop off. Because as the population ages, that population becomes incapable of having children. Just biologically, can't do it. So, boom, it drops off. So that inflection point is getting very close, the point where all of a sudden you're in the free fall and there's simply no way to recover from it. Think of it in terms of a bus full of people flying down a cliff. They're getting to the edge of the cliff and there's almost no way to hit those brakes right now. You can sort of see what's coming, but that's the first phase. The second phase is once you've actually gone off the cliff. Now, there's no way to avoid the crash. It's gonna happen. You can't stop it. That moment is called the inflection point. Russia is very close to that inflection point. Very close to it. The population is, in Russia, for example, is slated now to decrease from its current 143 million, which is how many Russians there are today, to 112 million. So rounded 140 million to 110 million, just round up the numbers, by 2050. In one generation, a 22% drop in population. How is this happening? How are we getting to this point? Everybody repeat after me. 2.1. All right, let's make sure the food's not digesting and overcoming you. 2.1 is the replacement rate for a human population. So a married couple has one child for mom, one child for dad, and the 0.1 is a little overage for those sad circumstances where children die of accidents or disease or whatever. So in order for the current population of any nation to stay where it is, you must have 2.1 children. So that becomes the number. Russia today is 1.4. Western Europe, including immigrants, most of whom are coming from the Middle East and are Muslim, even with that population there having roughly 3.6 to 3.8 children, the Muslim population that has moved in, immigrants, even with that, Western Europe's rate is 1.8. That includes that. Native-born Europeans, Their replacement rate is standing at 1.3. 1.3, not including the immigrants. That is, you're writing a death ticket. One of the things that we see in cultures, empires, and great civilizations that have passed is they almost always die of suicide. Very rarely do great empires and great civilizations just get overtaken by somebody else. They run this sort of human cycle of being very aggressive in their younger periods, the early periods of themselves. Then they kind of are masters and rulers of the world. They enjoy that, get lazy kind of thing. And then this same phenomenon starts to set in. The same thing happened with the birth rates in ancient Rome. Ancient Rome was overcome. It had to bring in conquered nations to populate the Roman legions. And there was a point towards the end, as the barbarians were kind of pouring over the walls and pouring over the frontiers, that the vast majority of the Roman legions were made up of people who were not Roman citizens. They were all imported immigrants and conquered nations, where people said, "Oh, I got a good life if I go join the Roman military. I'm from Persia, but hey, they got a great retirement plan." Now, a lot of people say, "Oh, this is all about, this is the Western thing, and it's a Western experience." Well, there's a Western dimension to it, but it's not isolated to just Western civilization. A lot of people are actually shocked to find out that this same phenomenon is now beginning to take root very fast in Muslim nations as well. In Muslim nations. In recent years, a number of the fertility rates that we've been examining have been dropping countries as well. For example, Kuwait, Algeria, Iran, and Tunisia have all seen their fertility rates drop by two-thirds in just the last 30 years. Two-thirds. Now, if you go back 30 years, it's like, it puts us back to about 1970, 1980. What started happening in 1970 and 1980? The United Nations Population Development Group came bouncing around with their condoms and their birth control pills. Iran's fertility rate right now, Iran, big old mean Ayatollah, Ahmadinejad, all that, their fertility rate today is 1.7. 1.7. Iran, Muslim Iran, those Muslims, they have 400 children. 1.7. 1.7. And that is the fertility rates in many of the Muslim nations have begun to stabilize at below that. What's that number? They've now settled in. They're either approaching that or they're starting to dip below it. And when you get there, gets a point. Remember that curve. There gets a point where you simply drop off now. You drop off. It's not just Muslim nations. Go to Latin America. Go to Latin America. Brazil. Largest Catholic country on earth. On earth. You'd have to go down the list of the numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 if you're measuring Catholic populations to add up to the total Catholic population in Brazil. The fertility rate in Brazil today, 2.3. Barely hanging on. Barely hanging on. Argentina, Uruguay, and Chile are below the replacement rates. Asia, China, with its forced abortion and one-child policy, has a fertility rate today of 1.7. In 5 years, get this is a devastating statistic. I mean, this is China, 1.2 billion people, China. In 5 years, in just 5 years, the median age of the Chinese citizen will be older than the United States. The median age. India, in the last 20 years, has brought their fertility rate down to 2.8. By 2020, remember, for those of you who are older, like my age, I'm 50, you remember back being in school in the 70s and the 80s, and everybody was going on about, this is going to happen in 2020. and 2025, and that seemed like 1,000 years down the road. It's less than 10 years away. It's less than 10 years away. Remember all this talk back in the 1960s and 70s, the population bomb, the population explosion? It was malarkey. It's malarkey. India's rate, fertility rate, will be below the necessary replacement rate in just 8 years. Japan is quite the story. Their current population is 127 million people. That's the entire nation of Japan. And Japan has stopped growing. If you look back 3 years ago, they had 127 million people. Today, 127 million people. But guess what's happening? See, the cycle, what's moving through, is that the people on the older end are living longer, but the replacement generation isn't coming. So the number flatlines. Well, unlike some people who have crazy ideas of theology and metaphysics, you cannot extend this age line out indefinitely. We die. In some cases, thank God. Japan is projected to sort of disappear nation altogether by the end of this century. Gone. Gone. An entire nation just annihilated. It's called in demographics, when it's applied to Asia, the old age tsunami. There are four major population centers having to deal with, you know, the economy of Asia, sort of the four pillars, you might say. Taiwan, Hong Kong, South Korea, and Singapore. Those areas have always been sort of seen as the four economic pillars of Asia. And when this economic, when this demographic tsunami, the old age tsunami, begins to really set in, it will devastate those centers and, by extension, all the rest of Asia. Economies will slow. Does that sound familiar? They will stagnate. Do you know what the GDP was, the GDP growth in the United States for the fourth quarter last year? Let me give you a little White House trick. I discovered this in my news time. It doesn't really matter who's in the White House, although it's accelerated in this particular White House. You'll see numbers released. It'll say, oh, the economy grew by a roaring 3.8% last quarter. And that'll be the headline splashed all over the New York Times and Washington Post, and they'll blab about it on MSNBC if they're not saying conservatives are weird. And when they're all done, quietly, about 3 to 5 weeks later, a revised number will come out. And then there will be, about 4 weeks later, a final number that comes out. And it is almost always revised downward. So the number that came out originally at the end of the fourth quarter last year was a 2.8% growth. That number has now been finally resolved down to a 1.7% growth. Same thing happens with the unemployment numbers because of how they're calculated. So just bear that in mind. If somebody says, the economy grew by 3%. No, the first paper came out and said it grew by 3%. It actually grew by 1.7%. The United Nations Population Division shows the population of the world will continue to creep up. And this is where you've got to understand the, you know, what's going on. Because you say, well, wait a second. If all these people are shrinking, then how come every time I hear this, like there's another growth? And thing? Because it takes a while for it to get through. You know, the ages are extending. It takes a while for all of this to cycle through. That's the problem. When it actually does start going down, you've kind of passed the point. You're beyond the point of no return once it starts shrinking. Because it takes so long to get this huge behemoth of the world population to shift that once it shifts in reverse, it's like a battleship coming back down the mountain on you. How do you stop it? So this is the United Nations numbers, by the way. The United Nations Population Division says that the world's population will continue to creep up until about the year 2040. So, you know, less than a generation from now. and it will peak at somewhere around between 7.6 to 8 billion. That's only about one-sixth of what it is, more than what it is now. Then the implosion will begin, which means we start to shrink back down. So we've got a little bit of, or kind of at the very, near the very top of the mountain, got a little bit more to go, and then in 2040, we reach the maximum, and then we start to come back down again. And by the year 2080, the next generation, see how this cycles through, the next generation will be at where we are today, and then we're off the cliff. That's why all of these projections out to the end of the century are dismal. And there's no way to recover from this. Now, lots of people are saying, well, you know, I'm 58. I don't really care what happens 100 years, you know, at the end of the century. But your grandchildren will. And for younger couples who have children, it's not at all inconceivable that as we stand here in 2012, that your children, your young children, will certainly be alive. Unless something horrible happens, they'll certainly be alive, you know, 70, 60, 70 years from now. How many people in the room here are over 60? So, certainly going to be alive. What's the world going to be like for your young children? By 2080, we go back to our current, where we are now. But it'll be an entirely different world. It's not going to be just, oh, this again. No, it's going to be a considerably aged world. Grayed, moving into white. Now, everything we do runs on a cycle. As economies, we run on a cycle. Everything. And you can think of it this way. Credit markets, people investing money. You save your money, you put it in the bank takes it, they steal half of it, they don't report the other half of it, and then they invest some of it. That's how the cycle works. How does it work like this? Well, because look, you've got all these people distributed over a major population. Some group is very old, some is on its way to being old, and others are old and retired, and you keep moving down the list, down the line like that. So the older generation is drawing from their investments. The sort of middle part of the population curve is still investing, and the people on the low end, the young folks, are doing the borrowing. That's the cycle. When you're young, you borrow. Well, who are you borrowing from? God? No. You're borrowing from banks. Where are the banks getting the money from? The banks are getting the money from the people up here who've been investing since they were down there. So the, in one sense, you can think of it very simply to say that we invest our retirement savings in the formation of the next generation. The younger ones borrow, the older ones reap the returns. And if you keep that paradigm and just keep shifting people through the queue like that, well, then that's how we build for, you know, you can't go out and work when you're, you know, 96, 40 hours a week and travel and all of that. So where do most people, why do most people borrow? What's the single most important thing that people borrow for? A house. Well, maybe now it's a college education, but used to be a house. Now, that entire market, that entire sector of the economy depends on one thing. It depends on families, two-parent families with children. Single individuals generally don't buy houses. They might, but they certainly could in this market because you can go pick one up for about $1.89 in Detroit. But but the level of these of the investment has always been reliant on two-parent families with children. Why? Because single-parent families are generally much more impoverished. They can't get by. They can't afford a house. So the people who buy a house are two-parent families with children. So consider this with our little demographic winter here brought on by contraception. America's population has risen from 200 to slightly over 300 million since 1970. Okay, not so bad. While the total number of two-parent families with children has remained exactly the same. In 40 years, there has not been an increase in the number of two-parent families with children. 25 million is the number. So 25 million people in 1970 represented that share of the population who were two parents and children. Now we've added another 100 million to the population, but not changed this number at all. However, the number of three-bedroom homes or more, three or more bedroom homes, has increased from 32 million to 72 million. How many private one-person individuals do you know go around buying three- and four-bedroom homes? When you move into economics, I've heard of supply and demand. There's no demand for homes like that, because there's no supply of people to buy them. Is it any wonder the housing market is the one where this all began, and all of the financing that goes into that behind the scenes? Now, in place of the traditional two-parent families with children, America has seen a massive, massive growth of one-parent families and childless families, what the government calls childless families. Do you know the census people also have a category called one-person family? I think that's cool. Person must have like a lot of mirrors in their house or something. Consider this little frightening statistic. In just the past 50 years, we now have the same number of dependent children, meaning children living at home, as we have dependent elderly adults. Yeah, not just, you know, grandma who can, you know, cut it loose every now and then and go out and take, but dependent elderly adults. It's the same number. Same number. Dependent children in 1960 formed half of the U.S. population. And today, they equal only 30%. That's almost a halving of the number of dependent children. At the same time, the dependent elderly went from 15% of the population up to 30%. 30% of the U.S. population today is dependent children. 30% of the population is dependent adults. That's 60% of the population. If the capital markets, the credit markets, are sort of driven by this cycle of human life, you know, people grow up, they get married, they have children, they buy a house, they move through, they borrow the money, that money that they borrow, they pay the interest on, that interest goes into whoever's loaning the money and gets paid back to the people who loan the banks the money, you. That's the cycle. But what happened, that cycle is a product of the way humans interact and live their lives with each other, sort of the cycle of human life. What happens if the cycle of human life changes? Well, then the entire economic system that sits on top of that, because the bottom falls out from under it, because the human lived experience changes, well, the whole economic system falls out also. How many of you have checked your, if you still have them, your retirement accounts lately? Where's the money? Where's the money? $15 trillion evaporated during the 2008 crash. And it did not evaporate from the salaries and the bonuses of Wall Street bankers. It evaporated from you. You could say that the world is poorer now because the present generation did not bother to raise and rear and have a new generation. Everything else we do, trying to fix this, move that, let's adjust this tax, let's pull this, or let's have a big fight on Capitol Hill, it's all trivial. It's all trivial. You're trying to repair a system of the underpinnings of which has just been taken out from under it. It's not there anymore. And what is there is just a vestige. So, America's housing market collapsed because while conservatives were crowing about winning the box office and different economic arguments, they lost the culture war. During the past half century, America has changed from a nation in which most households had two parents with young children. Now, you look around, did any of you really pay attention to the 2010 census forms? If you'd have had a 2000 census form next to you looking at the 2010 census form, you would have noticed an entirely different set of questions right beside each other when it came to describing your family, your household. Now we have this melange of alternative arrangements, and what we think of as the nuclear family is actually kind of an oddity. Now, it may not be in your circles, because I'm presuming many of you hang with other like-minded people, but the noose is growing very tight around us. And what's growing on the outside is something far different than what we experience in our daily lives. The collapse of home prices and everything that happened because of that happened because of the shrinking family. That's why. Wall Street and all that Washington stuff just kind of prolonged everything. It kept the bubble from exploding a few years. Lots of people were saying 10 and 15 years out, hey, wait a minute, there's something going on. Look at this bubble developing the housing market. A bubble's just essentially an economic term, meaning that the demand and the supply, there's too much supply, there's not enough demand, but you're kind of artificially keeping the demand up, but you can't keep it up forever. And eventually, these two things start to grow apart, and when this explodes, it comes crashing down. And it was just a few tweaking with things and messing around with tax laws and loopholes and all of this that kept it going. But you can't keep it going forever. It eventually blows up, and I don't mean 75 years from now. So how does this affect everything? Well, everybody's invested in real estate. Everybody. Even the government is invested in real estate. All of our pension plans were invested in this. This is why this massive thing happened in the United States and sent this shockwave all over Europe. What's going on today in Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Ireland? They're about to go bankrupt. This has never happened before in world history. We are in absolutely uncharted territories. And as the Vatican said, and the United Nations said, probably the only time in history they've agreed with each other, is that this is a crisis of demographics. There simply are not enough people dispersed over that population curve in the right proportion to prevent this from happening. So let's take a look at pensions very quickly. The International Monetary Fund says that aging populations will raise public pension spending in advanced economies, ours, Europe, United States, Australia, Canada, about 4 percentage points of the gross domestic product. Don't glaze over. That'll happen over the next 20 years. What does that mean? In the United States, public pension funds are Social Security. That's what we are. And then if you happen to work for the civil service and you have a separate pension fund, this is included in it. But right now, today, the United States government pays out about $650 billion in Social Security payments every year. Social Security payments, just Social Security payments, $650 billion. That's a whopping amount. And it represents about 4% of the gross domestic product. In the next 20 years, that's going to double. It's going to double. Say, well, that's all right. You know, we'll just have the people who are paying into the system, they'll just get more money from them, right? Anybody in here under 40? All right. Whatever you're giving me, paying into for me right now, in the next 20 years, I want you to double it. Because that's what you're going to have to do for me when I retire in 15 years, in order to maintain what I would get now. But in the next 15 years, if you give me $10 today, in 15 years from now, 18 years from now is actually the measure, 18 years from now, what I can buy for $10 today, I will actually need $18 18 years from now to buy. Rapidly falling fertility rates mean a diminishing base of workers, that's you guys, will have to bear that burden. There's more of us retiring, and there's less of you paying into it. We want our money, so we're taking it from you. The ratio of people drawing down a pension, drawing down Social Security, to workers who are paying into it is going to double. It's going to double in the next 30 years. So when those guys back there are my age, there will be half as many of them paying into it and twice as many of us pulling out of it. That means they got to pay it. How are they going to raise a family? Social Security, the single greatest expenditure of the U.S. federal budget, 20.8% for Social Security. We only spend 20.5% on the entire military complex, everything. All those nuclear weapons and this and that and everything else. The biggest single line item on the American budget is Social Security, and it's going to go up. It represents right now 7% of the entire gross domestic product of the United States. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. It will destroy the economy. You simply cannot keep paying out money like that and not have money come in. And here's the projection. In 2023, call it 10 years from now, it's 11, the total income and interest that's earned in that little Social Security fund that people are paying into, 10 years from now, it will no longer be able to cover how much is being paid out. Right now, there's still more money in there than is being paid out, but it keeps getting lower and lower and lower. That inflection point hits in 10 years, and there's no reversing this. There's no reversing it. By 2035, which is just essentially 20 years from now, the trust fund is gone. And I'm happy to hear that because I'll be 70. And when I hand in my little, walk up with my cane and hand in my thing, they'll say, oh, it's very nice. We're glad that you paid into this for so long, Mr. Voris, for those 50 years you worked. And all that time we took money out of your paycheck back when you were washing dishes in the dining hall at Notre Dame to help pay, and we kept drawing money out. Thank you very much for all that, but we gave it to all the people who've died 15 and 20 years ago, and I'm sorry, there's nothing left for you. That's the story. That's what it is. That's what it is. Now, you can play around with tinking this plan and moving this and tweaking this and, you know, pushing the retirement age up a little bit. And, you know, it's the system underpinning this is gone. It's gone. That's the issue. So, let's bring this back to why this is the case. This is the case because of contraception. Now, I know the pro-life movement likes to spend lots of time talking about abortion, and abortion is a horrible thing, but the doorway to abortion is contraception. 48% of the abortions that happen in the United States every year happen as a result of failed contraception. So when Planned Parenthood and all those crazies are walking around saying things like, we need more contraception! More contraception equals less abortion. That is an inverted diabolical lie. It is exactly the opposite. The more contraception means the more unintended pregnancies. Why? Because contraception fails. There is a built-in failure rate. Do you really think, stop for 1 minute and think about just the human logic of this. Planned Parenthood makes its money killing children. Why on earth would it want to hand out something that stops people from getting pregnant so there's no children to kill? They're killing their own customer base. They know that if you have 100 people and 10% of them use contraception that fails, Then they have 10 victims in which to feast and make their money. If, however, you have 1,000 people and 1,000 people are having wanton sex and they're all using contraception, well, guess what? You have 100 people now. You get to kill their children. Planned Parenthood is all about contraception because they know it fails. But all of this comes back to one thing and one thing only. All of it. All of it. And this is where the diabolical comes into it. The reason the economy is messed up like it is today, and there's no real way of bringing it back. Don't think all of these elections, these guys are just yamming on. Well, I'll move this and I'll shift this corporate tax over here and we'll move this and I'll take some money and we'll change the age. Shut up. It's not going to do anything. The reason the economy has fallen into the atrocious state it has is because the underlying human affairs and relationships have been beat down, and they've been beaten down by one thing. Because people want to and are under the illusion that they can have consequence-free sex. There is no such thing. There is no such thing. In 1968, when Pope Paul VI issued his encyclical Humanae Vitae, he went through the moral aspect. What would happen to relationships between people? Women, if contraception became widespread. He identified a number of areas. One, women would become objectified. Go into any gas station, party store, or anything else, and take a look at the magazines, magazine covers. That's objects. That men would start to forsake their paternal duties and surrender over their masculinity. That marriage rates would become sort of a thing of the past. The idea of marriage would become sort of a thing of the past. And that families would be obliterated. Spot on. Every one of them. What he did not do, because it wasn't the point of the encyclical, what he did not do was take the result of that and then apply it across the board economically. But we know what that is because we're now living it. We are right on the threshold of this transition. Father Srika said in his talk this morning, that the rising up, if you want to call it that way, the Catholic/Christian uprising and all the change over, people realizing what's happening. We're kind of in a transition. We're in a very early part of that transition, absolutely. And it sure seems like the good big aircraft carriers turning around. USS God is making that turn. But the same thing's happening with our economy. I say this lots of times on a sort of a theological point when I talk to different groups that are predominantly Catholic. And I say, you know, if you were a young person, meaning under 30, and you lived during the days of the Roman Empire, for 1,000 years, your patrimony, what you received generation after generation after generation, is that you were the masters of the world, the glory of Rome, the emperors, the vast lands, everything conquered everywhere. You couldn't go anywhere. Rome was everywhere. It was stamped on civilization. Nothing. 1/3 of the entire world population at its height lived under the influence of the Caesars. But then imagine right about the beginning of the middle of the 4th century, beginning of the 5th, all of a sudden that patrimony started to escape you. And some generation of 25-year-olds was the first to watch the barbarians march down the Via Appia and sack the capital of the empire of the world. Now, their grandfathers could never have imagined such a thing. Their grandfathers could never have imagined such a thing. All the way back to the days of the Republic, to Julius Caesar, and the 300, 400 years before that. Could never have imagined that. But there was that generation that was the first generation that watched the collapse begin. Now, the barbarians sacked Rome and they left, and the Romans sort of built it back up. But that was it. The inflection point had been reached. They were off the cliff. And it was just now a matter of time. Within 100 years, it was gone. The last emperor of Rome, Octavius, took his laurel wreath, put it on the throne of Caesar, hopped in a boat, and sailed down the Tiber to near Ostia, went out to the island of Capri and retired, and in a whisper, off went the Roman Empire, gone. There were young people, young Romans, who lived through that. Now, because of the rate of acceleration with communications and technology and finances and all of that business, any collapse of the Western Empire, of Western civilization, of which America is kind of the core, financially and economically, will happen at a much faster rate, and already is. Already is. Our thought, our notion of what we need to concern ourselves with is not how to rescue economies, but how to rescue souls. That's our concern. Thank God this life doesn't always go on. There comes a moment where we move into another life, and that life doesn't have an end. And that life, where we are in that life, will be dependent on how we try to help people in this life. Not just soup kitchens and all of that. Yes, that's necessary. Absolutely. Love your neighbor, second commandment. But the first commandment is the greatest. And that's love God. And what is the great desire of God? That all be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. And that's what we are charged with. Sure, you have to, but you know what? We've got a wonderful thing here. We've got a wonderful example of what we look at. Sin has consequences in this life and the next. 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 45 years ago, when Pope Paul released his encyclical, it was the absolute laughingstock of the Western world. The media laughed it to scorn. Catholic theologians were, this is ridiculous, da 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 da, da. You know, we have to be free, blah, 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 new age, new man, blah, 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 blah. Here's your new age. There's your new age. Welcome to it. The next generation, these young folks, are going to be the people who build the bridge into the chaos that will befall Western civilization in the next 40, 60 years. They're building the bridge into it. If there's anything that we here now can do to make up for what we did not do, let's at least equip them to have whatever tools we can give them to get into the new dark ages. Because that's where they're heading. That's where they're heading. Equip them with the truth so that if they can't have economic prosperity here, they can at least have eternal prosperity in heaven. That's our charge. I'd like to let you know that in the time since I have three DVDs out there on the table. In the time since we've produced these, one of these is called The Cost of Abortion. It goes into an economic analysis of what has happened to the United States economy because of abortion. And then these other two deal with sort of the larger theological issues, the culture of death and Catholics and sex. Obviously, those the one bad thing about doing DVDs and making productions is when you're done with them, you're done. And if you get new information, well, now you have to stand up in front of people and say it. It's not on the DVDs, but these are wonderful, if I do say so myself, these are wonderful, it's my shy Irish side, they're wonderful beginning places to think about where are we with regard to theologically and philosophically how we got where we were, or how we got where we are. They're out at the table out there. I'd like to leave you with one last little number. In 2010, just look this up. In 2010, with regard to Social Security in the United States, 54 million people were getting it, and 156 million people were paying into it. You're like, oh, that's not so bad. 157 million were paying into it. 54 getting, 157 paying. In 2011, 1 year later, 56 million people were getting, 2 million more were drawing it, but 158 million were paying into it. There was an increase of 2 million people drawing it down, but only an increase of 1 million people paying into it. How long, look, you guys have household budgets. How long do you think that insanity can go on? Well, according to the United States government, about another 8 or 9 years to 10 years, and then about 10 years after that, you're done. And it's all because of the diabolical. Satan hates human life. He hates human life. This is his party. And you got to fight this war spiritually. Fight this war spiritually and prepare everybody you can, particularly the next generation. Tell them the truth of what has happened. They're going to have to live with the consequences of it, so they should know who's to blame. God bless you all.
Amen. Questions.
You are listening to Michael Voris's presentation from our 2012 Bringing America Back to Life Symposium. Please stay tuned as you listen now to Michael's responses to questions from the audience posed by our MC, Star Parker.
Wow, Michael. We really want to thank you for that most depressing speech right after lunch. But how timely, because and how honest. Thank you. And in fact, I was at a college campus about 10 years ago, and you reminded me of that when in discussing Social Security reform at that point, because we know you are so right about everything that he just said, so you must get these tapes. It is so right. And so I said, we only have a few options here. And a young woman in the back raised her hand and said, no, Ms. Parker, you've forgotten one. It's called euthanasia.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they try to tweak retirement age to books have been written. Charles Murray, for those of you that are not familiar, is a libertarian thinker, social thinker. When a libertarian of that stature comes out with a book said, titled Coming Apart, you know we're in trouble. We are in tremendous trouble. And I was just having a conversation with another one of my friends who happens to be at 7 or 8 children. And I said, and actually, she said one of the questions that is before you, why would they do this? Why would they continue to support these ideas that are destroying them? Which is a question that one of that he didn't choose. And my response to her at that time was, because they know that you're in this room. They know that decent people are always going to be among us that are going to have children, that are going to pass those values to their children. So they're wrecking the rest of society. We end up paying for it. This
Absolutely.
Was exact. You are so right about that. Anyway, I'm going to ask a couple of questions that did come through. And I suppose I'm really into this one, as depressing as it was, because I'm living that reality, running a think tank in Washington. We already know what's getting ready to happen, and society has to now catch up with it, and it is very, very scary. And in fact, this question says, with all the scary statistics available, why do these various countries and governments continue to promote population control, which is the question that I just alluded to and is being asked of you.
And
abortion, not just population control.
Yeah, abortion, population, sterilization, mm-hmm. contraception, all of it. There is a view of man that different people hold. And it essentially boils down to, do you believe that heaven is here on earth, or do you believe that heaven is in the next life? That's really it. I mean, if you're to make it, this is a very oversimplified answer because of the time constraint, but that's it. So there have always been, and particularly now, are people, political parties, politicians, very wealthy people who simply have a view of man. It's an anthropological thing. You know, how do they see man? And they see man as, well, let's make a utopia here. And so they move everything towards that. And the fact that all of these people would either die or be impoverished or whatever, they don't really care. I don't know how to say it any nicer than that. They don't care. They don't care. Bill Gates came out and said that he thinks the world population would be best if it hung around about 200 to 300 million.
If you are encouraged and edified by what you hear, please accept our invitation to become an active and informed member of the pro-life movement. There are many opportunities to serve. Visit our website at www.clevelandrighttolife.org or contact us at 216-661-3000, extension 11, or at lifenews@clevelandrighttolife.org. And please consider sharing this audio file with someone.